It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
2-1 pitch. That's crushed. Deep right center field. Celestino watches. Booked by Pete Crow Armstrong. PCA annihilated that baseball.
Yeah, the Cubs will play tomorrow afternoon. 1:20 is the first pitch at Wrigley Field. They sit 3.5 games out of a wild card spot. Meanwhile, the Arizona Diamondbacks will be their opponent, and the Diamondbacks are right there. They're the first team out of the wild card at the moment, so a lot of movement we expect to happen here. And so this is one of those, midway points, just halfway past the midway point of the season, or a little bit past the midway point of the season matchups that have playoff implications, I guess, if you want to get dramatic about it. So today, we continue to talk some Cubs baseball. We'll get back to the Bears talk. Don't worry about that. But we go to the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. We bring in broadcaster for the Iowa Cubs. It is a guy who, by the way, is going to get the opportunity tomorrow to call Cubs baseball for Marquee. He will be replacing Boog Shambi tomorrow. It's Alex Cohen who is joining us on the Score. Good evening, Alex. How's it going?
It's going pretty well. How about yourself?
Doing okay. First of all, congratulations. My understanding is this will be a major league debut for you tomorrow afternoon.
So it'll be the Wrigley Field debut. I called the game on Sunday at Busch Stadium, so I got to call.
Oh, great.
1, 2, 3, 4, 6 home runs. So that was fun. It was really enjoyable, but no. First game at Wrigley Field tomorrow. Really looking forward to it.
All right, so you get to be at Wrigley Field for the first time. I know it's a ballpark that you have probably been to in the past, so yes. you know the history behind it. Have you been up in that press box before?
I have. I've been there during some cold days, been there during some warm days, and I've been able to really enjoy everything of what Wrigley Field has to offer. It's one of the best views in not just all of baseball, but all of sports when you look out and see a packed house at Wrigley Field and the sun setting and people are there, they're vibrant, they're happy, and there's really no better atmosphere than Wrigley Field on a summer afternoon or evening. So looking forward to seeing that from the perch of the TV or TV booth. I'd say the TV radio booth, would that be an oxymoron? So yeah, the TV booth would be fun.
Yeah, looking forward to having you up there, Alex, and really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us tonight. And I want to talk about the Iowa Cubs team specifically. We'll do that in just a little bit, but as you sit here, certainly you're paying attention to what's been happening at the big league club, and you've called a game already, and you know that everything that happens in Iowa, a lot of it eventually filters its way to the big league club. So as you look at the Cubs and where they are right now, knowing what's going on in baseball, knowing how tight everything is in the National League, how do you see the next several weeks and months playing out?
It's really interesting you say that and ask that. I think that Cliff Floyd and Mark DeRosa had a conversation about this on MLB Network like a week before the All-Star break and essentially said, yeah, I think at that point it was July 3rd. It's like, you know what? It's July 3rd and not July 30th. And you're 3.5 back. You're not 13.5 back. So you still have time to make decisions on what you want to do for the next month, what you want to be for the next year. Are you rebuilding? Are you retooling? Are you going for it? I think this is a really important homestand. If they could somehow win the series against the Diamondbacks or win the entire homestand in general, week here at Wrigley Field, then go on the road. If you're 2.5 back, 1.5 back, you're buying. I mean, you're a team right now that it is built to withstand some really big time surges because you might have the best starting pitching in the National League right now. So that doesn't fall off trees. So just being able to put forth the Justin Steele tomorrow, with Jameson Taillon being the pitcher that everybody wanted him to be last year, and Shota Imanaga, an all-star. I mean, their team right now with those guys, if you can hit a little bit, you're buying.
Yeah, and that will be the interesting thing, because all of these teams I mentioned, pretty much every team in the National League is in it, with the exception of a couple. Most teams in the American League are still in sniffing distance of the postseason, with the exception of maybe four or five teams would consider themselves out of it, I think, at this point. So that pool of talent, and I said this earlier tonight, that any team who's looking to upgrade has to pick from, that pool of talent is kind of shallow. So you do kind of wonder, even if the Cubs are in buy mode, what they actually end up doing. It might be difficult.
It might be. I mean, if you're going to trade with the Oakland Athletics, you might not be getting Mason Miller, but you might want to get Lucas Urshak. You know, if you're trading with the Miami Marlins, you might not be getting Jesus Luzardo, but you could be getting Tanner Scott. So it's one of those things where you might not get the number one guy on that team, or maybe they've already been poached, you know, like Luis Arias going to the San Diego Padres a couple months ago. But there are guys on those teams who can help playoff contenders. Are they the guy? Probably not. Are they a guy? They are.
We're talking to Alex Cohen, who is the play-by-play voice of the Iowa Cubs, calling the game on Marquee for the big league team tomorrow. And we've had, and this is not the first time I've heard this, we had a caller earlier who wanted to see Pete Crow Armstrong serve as the Cubs' leadoff hitter. And I've heard other people suggest the same thing. My assumption is it's kind of old school thinking. Here's a guy who's fast, therefore he should lead off. In terms of projecting him long term, he's not getting on base right now, but can you see him being somebody who does get on base more regularly and can lead off?
I'll start with the positive. I mean, he led off pretty much every level of minor league baseball up until the big league. So that's somewhere where he's used to hitting, he's used to seeing a certain type of pitch sequence. His skill set leads to that, because you can put the ball on the ground, you can get on base, you can steal some bases. Obviously, he needs to get on base a little bit more at the big league level in order to be a productive leadoff hitter. I think you were seeing signs of that in St. Louis. Obviously, the two-homer game was great. I think the third at-bat of that game, the walk, was his best at-bat, and he also walked the day before that. So is he pulling together a 360, 370 on-base percentage? Probably not. But if you're Pete Crow Armstrong, and if you can get that batting average up to 230, 240, if you can get on base at a 320, 330 clip with his speed and what he's able to do on the bases, he's not your traditional leadoff hitter, but he can certainly make some things happen at the top of the order. So I don't think that I'm expecting him to go up there and hit at a 280 clip and get on base at a 370 clip. I just don't think that that's in his skill set right now. But that being said, I mean, when he gets on base, good things happen. So the more walks he draws, the more times he slaps the ball third base side and legs out an infield single, more times he bunts, he becomes more of a productive hitter and a threat.
Yeah, and he is one of the most intriguing players. So if you're a Cubs fan, and you know, anybody who has a big league team and watches it, not everybody pays attention to the minor leagues, but most people have a vague idea of who some of the minor leaguers are. And that's one of the guys that people for years now have been talking about, that there's some excitement when it comes to him, and then there's a hope that he turns into a pretty good big league player. You seeing him up close, play regularly, do you see that in him? I know you went over some of his positive traits, but as a player, as a person, do you think that he has the kind of mindset that you would have to in order to improve some of the stuff he needs to improve?
Yes, I do. I really do. And I think in a league where you've seen guys like Kevin Kiermaier win multiple gold gloves and make millions and millions of dollars and almost have 10 years of big league service time, in the last 5 years, he has a career 680 OPS. So I think with Pete, what he's able to do defensively, he might be better than Kiermaier. He's a better base runner. He's got a little bit more pop than Kiermaier. So if you, at the floor, if you're a 3-4-time gold glover, I think there's a lot to build off him. He is tirelessly trying to improve from a plate perspective, trying to take more pitches. He's working with Dustin Kelly. He's working with John Mailey. He's working with Craig Counsell. He's working with Dansby Swanson. He's somebody who he really thinks that he's put on this earth to play baseball and succeed at a high level. And I think that there's not many things that's going to stop him doing that. Obviously, injuries can happen, but he's somebody that the work is there, the ethic is there, I think the raw ability is among the best that we've seen in the Cubs organization. He really has a chance to be special.
One of the Cubs' top prospects, at least according to MLB at the beginning of the season, was Cade Horton, the right-handed pitcher, and he's got the injury that he's been dealing with and out for a while. What's the latest on him?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's in Arizona just trying to go back up and get healthy. I think the expectation is you see Cade Horton pitching in an Iowa Cubs uniform at some point before the end of the season. I think the Cubs are in a good place right now where you're pushing towards the playoffs. You don't need starting pitching right now because you have those three horses that I brought up earlier in the season. You're hopefully getting Jordan Wicks back. You're hopefully getting Ben Brown back. Kyle Hendricks has been pretty good since he came off the injured list. So they have enough starting pitching to let, I won't say Cade Horton take his time, but to really get healthy. I think the sky's the limit for him. I mean, my two main comps for Cade Horton from what I saw are Sonny Gray and Tim Hudson. You know, just with that build, really, really athletic, fluid off the mound, fastball, mid to high 90s, got a nasty slider, great secondaries, great mound presence on the mound. So I think those are my two main comps for him, which are two pretty good comps. So I think he's somebody that if he's healthy, if he gets healthy in August, gets healthy in September, he could certainly help a big league roster. But the way that the Cubs are positioned right now in their starting rotation, he doesn't necessarily have to do that. So he's in a good spot.
Yeah, so we've mentioned a couple of guys that you've seen a lot of this year, but as the Cubs get deeper into the season and, you know, if they're still in the playoff hunt, or even if they're not, you know, there are always September call-ups. Who can you see at AAA right now, the way they've been playing, that you think could very much help this team at some point this year?
I'll tell you what, I think Moises Ballesteros can really help them offensively. As a catcher, I'm not sure if you're playing him three out of every 6 days behind the dish. You might have to DH. You might have to play first a little bit, get creative. But Moises has surprised the Cubs brass at the AAA level with the way he's able to call games down there. You know, as a catcher, we're able to receive, able to throw, and he can flat out HIT hit. He can rake. So he's the guy that right now offensively I think can really help the Cubs, and I think they're just trying to get him. I mean, he's 20 years old, so just trying to get him to mature behind the plate, call a game. But I remember talking with Dan Straley, who's down with the Iowa Cubs right now. I mean, this is a guy who's been in professional baseball 15 years in the big leagues for almost eight. And he loves throwing to Moises Ballesteros. I think that means something there. So a guy who can hit right now and develop catching-wise in a position that hasn't quite materialized offensively like the way the Cubs want, he has a chance to be a real figure behind the plate for the Cubs and somebody who could really help in that lineup, hopefully soon.
Alex Cohen, tomorrow you've got the game on Marquee filling in for Boog Shambi, so it's going to be a lot of fun to have you at Wrigley Field. I know that you are certainly looking forward to it. It's the first time for you. We'll be enjoying the broadcast, my friend, so thank you for talking with us tonight, and have fun tomorrow at the friendly confines.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Really appreciate it. There's nothing like a day Friday game at Wrigley Field when it comes to baseball, so I'm really looking forward to it.
Alex Cohen is the play-by-play voice of the Iowa Cubs. Again, he's on Marquee tomorrow, and he is filling in for Boog Shambi. It is a 1:20 first pitch. And, of course, you can listen to the ball game right here on The Score. 12:45 for the pregame show, 1:20 first pitch. It is the Cubs and Justin Steele getting the start against the Diamondbacks. I don't believe the Diamondbacks, unless they've changed it in the last hour or so, I don't believe they have announced their starter for tomorrow. You can correct me if I'm wrong. I love to be corrected. It's my most favorite thing in the whole wide world. Meet Ron Coomer from 7 to 8:30 p.m. tomorrow. Actually, Ron's one of my favorite things in the world. I love Ron Coomer. Tomorrow night, 7 to 8:30 at his restaurant, Coom's Corner. It's in Lockport. He will be meeting fans, signing autographs, give away some memorabilia, and more. And it is all brought to you by BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks. That is Ron Coomer, 7 to 8:30 tomorrow in Lockport at Coombs Corner. I'm Chris Ranji. The phone lines open, baby. 312-644-6767. Eric Edholm is still set to join us tonight. We will talk some football with him. Bears training camp starts tomorrow. You're listening to The Score.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
It's Chris Ranji on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Baseball coverage on The Score is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. I am Chris Ranji. We've got until 9 o'clock to talk to you. Eric Edholm from NFL.com, who covers football, really a draft expert, but football expert. He's awesome. Eric Edholm is going to join the show in just a little bit. We'll talk about Bears training camp, which is opening. I mean, players have reported, veterans report, and then the first full practice that people can attend will be on Saturday. So, of course, even though there is baseball tomorrow afternoon, they're going to talk some Bears football all day right here on The Score. That's going to happen, of course, because it is such a big deal. That was one of the things that amazed me the most moving to Chicago originally years ago, back in 2002. And I'm just telling Robbie Triano, our producer tonight, who's also an out-of-towner. You know, I went to Illinois State, which is halfway between where I grew up and where Chicago is. And, I ended up falling in love with the city because all of my friends were from Chicago, either Central Illinois or Chicago. And then I got to learn of The Score through people who were from Chicago, and they knew I was into sports radio, and they're like, oh, you got to check this station out. It's the best. And so I did, and I the first voice I ever heard on the station was Mike North. I heard this guy who sounded like one of the guys in the Superfan sketch on SNL, and I thought, this guy's amazing, and it was Pappy. So I fell in love with the station, and I fell in love with the atmosphere, the sports fan environment in Chicago, even when, and maybe especially when, you can make the argument, the teams are bad, it's so great. And yeah, there's a lot of anger and vitriol and people lose their minds, but there's something about it, as stupid as it can be, there's something about it that's so beautiful. And I love it. I love the Chicago sports scene. And I love how crazy you all get. It's one of my favorite things. And I love that it can be freaking May. Not even draft time yet. It could be March. Or it can be May. It could be after the draft. And nothing is decided and nothing's going on. And people want to talk Bears. I love that. It's so fun that people want to talk Bears football when it's not even close to football season. That's how much people love the Bears. And I grew up a Bears fan down here. My grandpa in the area in St. Louis where I grew up, he was a cop, and he was friends with the Madison County Sheriff, George Musso, who was a Bears player, who was Sheriff on the weekdays and playing Bears football on weekends. Just incredible stuff. So that became my introduction to Bears football. And I've always loved Bears fandom. And all of you, listen to me right now. Listen closely. You are insane, and I love you. I even love this texter, who's again sharing acronyms. I specifically told you no more acronyms. This texter from a 312, Bears should be very aggressive, great instincts, nice attitude. Man, you are all going to get me in trouble. And I feel like you're trying to. And I don't think that's very nice. Robbie Triano producing the show tonight. When we come back, we are going to visit with Eric Edholm, who covers the NFL for NFL.com. Get his Bears thoughts and football thoughts. General football. Reporting for duty. That's coming up when we come back. Chris Ronji on the Score.
It's Chris Ronji on 670 The Score, an Odyssey station.
On 670 The Score, it is Chris Ronji tonight, and it is time again to go to the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Circa Resort and Casino, home of the world's largest sports book, and we are joined by NFL.com's Eric Edholm, who is with us, a good friend of the station, and joins us on 670 The Score. Good evening, Eric. How are you?
Good evening to you, sir. What's going on?
Oh, you know, just getting ready for real football. It's about as good as a Bears fan can possibly feel other than winning the Super Bowl, because everything seems to be going right, at least at the moment.
It's a little scary, isn't it, right? It's almost like, you know, you're walking around thinking, we're waiting for the other shoe to fall. But yeah, I mean, the excitement that's kind of drafted off of a strong finish last year, the off-season pieces coming into place, Caleb Williams, Hard Knocks, you got to be excited about that. I mean, you know, expectations are here. I didn't feel they were legit last year. You know, I felt a little buzz around week one. This year, though, there's no denying it. This team looks better, and I'm excited to see what kind of product it is.
Yeah, I think people are going into the season assuming this is going to be a 9-win team or a 10-win team. And if it isn't that, there's going to be a lot of disappointment. As you look at what they are, do you see, well, I mean, it's possible, certainly, that they end up under 500, but
right,
it doesn't feel unreasonable this is a 10-win team.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's possible. I mean, you know, I think one big thing is, you know, keeping Caleb healthy. You know, we saw obviously last year with Tyson Bajan, who did a remarkable job for what he was asked to do to take over. But starting with him staying healthy and developing at some reasonable pace, I don't think he's going to come up and, you know, and then week one against the Titans and blow the roof off the place. I think it's going to be a gradual thing. His style takes a little time to mesh with, you know, somewhat traditional NFL offense. So there'll be, you know, times where he looks great, times where it's less than desirable, times where you think he might have the next, you know, Aaron Rodgers type of quarterback on the roster. And the Bears haven't had that in forever. So it's understandable. But yes, there are some pitfalls. I think the schedule lays out pretty nicely. You know, I mean, even with some early, a couple of good games that are interesting, like the Texans and Rams. But, you know, they should be, I think 4-2 is not unreasonable at the bye. And then you can kind of reassess. 3-3 would also kind of be acceptable, I think, if you've seen enough progress on defense, if you feel like, you know, the offense is at least getting some drives going. But yeah, I mean, it's a tough division, but I think there is a path to that, you know, 9, 10, even 11 wins, you know, with a few lucky bounces. The Vikings won, what, 13 games a couple years ago, lost first round. Was that a 13-win team? No. But so that's the type of season I could see, if everything goes right, that I'm having. If everything goes wrong, I don't think it's 4-13, but it's, you know, very well could be under 500.
As much as we've spent focusing on Caleb himself and how his talent is going to be realized, if it's going to be all the way to the full potential, or if he's a bust, or if all this other stuff that people criticized, you know, the painted nails and all the pink phone and all that nonsense, if the personality, the diva or whatever people think he is, will end up ruining whatever talent he has. We spend so much time on that, and I feel like that's nonsense to me.
I think what I'm most concerned about with this team is the head coach the right person? Do you think the head coach is the right person to extract out of him whatever needs to be extracted?
Yeah, I think at 0-4 last year, there were a lot of people who pushed Matt Eberflus to the top of the head coaching, you know, hot seat rankings or whatever, and you know, probably for good reason at that point. Things felt shaky. Obviously, the Alan Williams situation, everything was kind of boiling over with Fields. It wasn't real pretty. And he managed to not only staunch the bleeding, but also turn this into a pretty competitive team. Now, obviously, Week 18 didn't go the way they hoped or thought or planned, but you know, everything leading up to that point showed progress. The very next game against Washington, we saw, whoa, what was this, right? So, you know, there were eye-opening moments down the stretch, and yet now here they are changing coordinators, changing quarterbacks, you know, bringing in two receivers who theoretically will have big roles. You know, there's a lot happening still. So, you know, it's not just this easy ride that he can sit back and say, okay, we've got this thing in cruise control. No, he's got to worry about his defense. He's got to worry about his rookie quarterback, whom he'll be asked about every single day from now until January and beyond. And he's also got to make all these new parts mesh together. So, yeah, there's a lot on Eberflus's plate. And if he can handle it the way he did, you know, weeks 5 to 17 or whatever last year, maybe he is the right guy. And I know everyone wants the sexy offensive-minded coaches these days and everything, but some pretty good defensive background guys too. And I don't know what to make of them at this point, how much weight you put in everything before and that one stretch, because I think that's been his best coaching. But he's certainly got some things to prove this year, I think.
Eric Edholm from NFL.com is with us on 670 The Score. Yeah, what is your general feeling on that? When you have a young quarterback coming in, especially one who has,
right,
you know, as much hype as any incoming QB has ever had, in, you know, historically, and you don't have an offensive head coach. I mean, the concern is always that maybe you have a great coordinator, but if he's good enough, he's probably going to get poached and he'll be gone, and then you're left with the defensive head coach. Does that kind of thing worry you at all with a young quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, just going back to the offseason, I still thought there was a chance that they could move on from Eberflus, if for no other reason than it was obvious at that point that they were going to get Caleb Williams in the draft if they wanted to, or some other young quarterback if one of the other candidates blew them away. So just in recent history, typically new shiny new quarterback, new head coach, that often happens. So when you know these things are happening, you try to kind of marry those two up with the idea of, okay, this guy is going to shepherd the quarterback. They're tied at the hip. You know, they can't let each other fail. They have the same goals in mind. Like you said, if you have that, you know, Nick Sirianni, Jalen Hurts kind of thing going, look, they've been up and down, but, you know, those two are kind of in ride or die mode, you know, and that's the way the Eagles want it. So, again, I mean, there are other examples around the league, but that was maybe the mild surprise of the offseason was that they didn't bring in a new coach. Again, I didn't think he should be. It was just a matter of, like, reading the tea leaves. So, yeah, I mean, I'll be fascinated to see, like, what the offensive design looks like. You know, what is Shane Waldron, what are most important for him, you know, to have Caleb do? Is it 90% rollout stuff outside the pocket? Is it in the pocket? Does he want him just sort of dinky and dunky and taking an occasional shot? You know, it's a lot to figure out between now and September.
Talking with Eric Edholm, and let's just talk about the contract for a little bit. On the surface, it seems like the hang-up, and though I think many of us really weren't concerned that the deal wasn't going to get signed, it was just a matter of why would it take so long. It seems like they were, you know, his legal team was testing the parameters of what a rookie contract is and, you know, the commitment that they have to make. If there's a player, you know, in the future who might test those boundaries a little bit more, does it seem like this situation with Caleb signing the deal kind of at the last minute, that maybe it helped progress that a little bit so that players have more, rookie players, especially quarterbacks, have more leverage in the future? Do you think they push that boundary at all?
Yeah, I'd be curious to see, you know, what the conversation will be a year from now or 2 years from now. And as we get closer to negotiations for the next CBA, especially, that's when these conversations tend to ramp up. Every 5 or 10 years, we start having the conversation over what's fair and what's not in the NFL. And obviously, Caleb's people were pushing for some stuff that was viewed as a little off the wall or whatever. But the no franchise tag was obviously it sounded like the biggest thing. And I didn't, yeah, you know, speak to anybody directly about it, but just from what I've heard and read. And so, yeah, that's the kind of thing that, you know, other players and union leaders have been quietly railing against vocally at the times of these negotiations or whenever they have a pulpit. And so, you know, to me, I always look back and say, how many guys are franchised per year? I mean, it's not a massive number. So that could be the kind of thing where the NFL maybe gives some resistance and then ends up kind of giving them that, you know, maybe some kind of concession. I don't know whether it's eliminating the tag or loosening the parameters a little bit or expanding the salary or whatever it may be. But, you know, in a good negotiation, you always make it seem like you're giving up more than you are, you know? So it'll be fascinating to see where that one goes. I don't think it's going away, but I could see it maybe being altered in the future.
I think for a lot of people, Eric, last year turned into quite a surprise when the NFC North ended up being a pretty good division. And yeah, it appears to be probably stronger this year than it was last year. Will it play out that way? Will it play out to be a better division than even 2023 was?
Yeah, I mean, I actually did a piece earlier this summer. I took a lot of flack for it, by the way. I had the NFC North pretty far down.
Okay.
My argument was I didn't think there was yet an elite team, but I said basically one of my, I don't remember what I wrote, but I said, you know, if you want to sort of invest in a division, this is one to do it in, right? I mean, you know, Jared Goff's still very much in his prime. Obviously, you know, the Vikings make, you know, J.J. McCarthy. We don't know if he'll pan out, but, you know, they invested pretty heavily in him. Same with the Bears and Caleb, and obviously with the, who did I miss? Green Bay with Jordan Love, yeah. So, you know, four young quarterbacks, four either up-and-coming teams, or in the case of the Lions, and maybe you'd argue the Packers too, teams that showed they were here for good last year, but then again, Green Bay was 3-6. You know, Minnesota had a wild season with quarterback injuries and everything last year. We know how the Bears roller coaster went, and you know, even Detroit had some ups and downs, even with as glorious a season as they had. So that's why I have a little bit of hesitation. There wasn't that one clear cut top 10 type of team outside of the Lions, but most of their divisions seem to have one other little anchor there that's a little stronger, but my words could be eaten pretty darn fast after this year if it, you know, if Love keeps up what he does, McCarthy impresses at some point, obviously Caleb does his thing, and the Lions keep on going.
Yeah, you know, maybe that's a fairer way to put it, that it's, okay, here's what it felt like. It was a division last year that it didn't, a lot of the teams were pretty evenly matched, but nobody really totally stunk, if that makes sense.
Right.
Right. So,
like the weakest team in the division is as good as almost any other team's weakest team, right? Or any other division, I mean, yeah.
Yeah. So I guess it's that kind of looking at it that way. And I guess it figures that here come the Bears finally. But maybe that team, maybe all the other teams are better too, which kind of sucks. We're talking to Eric Hedholm from NFL.com, who is with us. So with training camp, you know, not every team reports at the same time. Some teams are getting started a little bit later than others. But as you look across the NFL, is there a storyline outside of the Bears, which really, I mean, they're going to be on Hard Knocks, Caleb Williams, you know, all of this, Rome Odunze, they've got a lot of the preseason hype. Is there a story elsewhere in the NFL that you think is maybe the second most interesting, or maybe you think it's more interesting than the Bears?
Yeah, I'll do a typical journalist trick and pair two teams together because they do have a common thread, I think, and and that would be the Dallas Cowboys and Miami Dolphins. Both had really impressive regular seasons. Both played really well at home. helped themselves out in doing so. Both quarterbacks had career years. Tua Tagovailoa, Dak Prescott. You know, we're talking about two guys who were in the MVP race last year, you know, at least at various points. Dak finished second. I don't think Tua was fourth or fifth. I can't remember now. But, you know, I mean, we're talking about guys who were at the top of their game last year, and yet both teams lost round one of the playoffs, unimpressive in doing so. You know, you could say the extreme cold hurt Miami, but still, you got, you know, you're on with Super Bowl. You got to play in those kind of games. But Dallas getting trashed at home by the Packers. You know, Mike McCarthy, hot seat, no doubt. He and Jerry Jones, what's the relationship?
It's Chris Ronji on 670 The Score, an Odyssey station.
On 670 The Score, it is Chris Ronji tonight, and it is time again to go to the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Circa Resort and Casino, home of the world's largest sports book. And we are joined by NFL.com's Eric Edholm, who is with us, a good friend of the station, and joins us on 670 The Score. Good evening, Eric. How are you?
Good evening to you, sir. What's going on?
Oh, you know, just getting ready for real football. It's about as good as a Bears fan can possibly feel other than winning the Super Bowl, because everything seems to be going right, at least at the moment.
It's a little scary, isn't it, right? It's almost like, you know, you're walking around thinking, we're waiting for the other shoe to fall. But, yeah, I mean, the excitement that's kind of drafted off of a strong finish last year, the off-season pieces coming into place, Caleb Williams, Hard Knocks, you got to be excited about that. I mean, you know, expectations are here. I didn't feel they were legit last year. You know, I felt a little buzz around week one. This year, though, there's no denying it. This team looks better, and I'm excited to see what kind of product it is.
Yeah, I think people are going into the season assuming this is going to be a 9-win team or a 10-win team. And if it isn't that, there's going to be a lot of disappointment. As you look at what they are, do you see, well, I mean, it's possible, certainly, that they end up under 500, but
right,
it doesn't feel unreasonable this is a 10-win team.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's possible. I mean, you know, I think one big thing is, you know, keeping Caleb healthy. You know, we saw, obviously, last year with Tyson Bajan, who did a remarkable job for what he was asked to do to take over, but starting with him staying healthy and developing at some reasonable pace. I don't think he's going to come up and, you know, in week one against the Titans and blow the roof off the place. I think it's going to be a gradual thing. His style takes a little time to mesh with, you know, somewhat traditional NFL offense. So there'll be, you know, times where he looks great, times where it's less than desirable, times where you think he might have the next, you know, Aaron Rodgers type of quarterback on the roster. And the Bears haven't had that in forever. So it's understandable. But yes, there are some pitfalls. I think the schedule lays out pretty nicely. You know, I mean, even with some early, a couple of good games that are interesting, like the Texans and Rams. But, you know, they should be, I think 4-2 is not unreasonable at the bye. And then you can kind of reassess. 3-3 would also kind of be acceptable, I think, if you've seen enough progress on defense, if you feel like, you know, the offense is at least getting some drives going. But yeah, I mean, it's a tough division, but I think there is a path to that, you know, 9, 10, even 11 wins, you know, with a few lucky bounces. The Vikings won, what, 13 games a couple years ago, lost first round. Was that a 13-win team? No. But so that's the type of season I could see, if everything goes right, that I'm having. If everything goes wrong, I don't think it's 4-13, but it's, you know, very well could be under 500.
As much as we've spent focusing on Caleb himself and how his talent is going to be realized, if it's going to be all the way to the full potential, or if he's a bust, or if all this other stuff that people criticized, you know, the painted nails and all the pink phone and all that nonsense, if the personality, the diva or whatever people think he is, will end up ruining whatever talent he has. We spend so much time on that, and I feel like that's nonsense to me. I think what I'm most concerned about with this team is the head coach the right person? Do you think the head coach is the right person to extract out of him whatever needs to be extracted?
Yeah, I think at 0-4 last year, there were a lot of people who pushed Matt Eberflus to the top of the head coaching, you know, hot seat rankings or whatever. And you know, probably for good reason at that point. Things felt shaky. Obviously, the Alan Williams situation, everything was kind of boiling over with Fields. It wasn't real pretty. And he managed to not only staunch the bleeding, but also turn this into a pretty competitive team. Now, obviously, Week 18 didn't go the way they hoped or thought or planned, but you know, everything leading up to that point showed progress. The very next game against Washington, we saw, whoa, what was this, right? So, you know, there were eye-opening moments down the stretch, and yet now here they are changing coordinators, changing quarterbacks, you know, bringing in two receivers who theoretically will have big roles. You know, there's a lot happening still. So, you know, it's not just this easy ride that he can sit back and say, okay, we've got this thing in cruise control. No, he's got to worry about his defense. He's got to worry about his rookie quarterback, whom he'll be asked about every single day from now until January and beyond. And he's also got to make all these new parts mesh together. So, yeah, there's a lot on Eberflus's plate. And if he can handle it the way he did, you know, weeks 5 to 17 or whatever last year, maybe he is the right guy. And I know everyone wants the sexy offensive-minded coaches these days and everything, but some pretty good defensive background guys too. And I don't know what to make of him at this point, how much weight you put in everything before and that one stretch, because I think that's been his best coaching. But he's certainly got some things to prove this year, I think.
Eric Edholm from NFL.com is with us on 670 The Score. Yeah, what is your general feeling on that? When you have a young quarterback coming in, especially one who has,
right,
you know, as much hype as any incoming QB has ever had, it, you know, historically, and you don't have an offensive head coach. I mean, the concern is always that maybe you have a great coordinator, but if he's good enough, he's probably going to get poached and he'll be gone, and then you're left with the defensive head coach. Does that kind of thing worry you at all with a young quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, just going back to the offseason, I still thought there was a chance that they could move on from Eberflus, if for no other reason than it was obvious at that point that they were going to get Caleb Williams in the draft if they wanted to, or some other young quarterback if one of the other candidates blew them away. So just in recent history, typically new shiny new quarterback, new head coach, that often happens. So when you know these things are happening, you try to kind of marry those two up with the idea of, okay, this guy is going to shepherd the quarterback. They're tied at the hip. You know, they can't let each other fail. They have the same goals in mind. Like you said, if you have that, you know, Nick Sirianni, Jalen Hurts kind of thing going, look, they've been up and down, but, you know, those two are kind of in ride or die mode, you know, and that's the way the Eagles want it. So, again, I mean, there are other examples around the league, but that was the mild surprise of the offseason was that they didn't bring in a new coach. Again, I didn't think he should be. It was just a matter of, like, reading the tea leaves. So, yeah, I mean, I'll be fascinated to see, like, what the offensive design looks like. You know, what is Shane Waldron? What are most important for him, you know, to have Caleb do? Is it 90% rollout stuff outside the pocket? Is it in the pocket? Does he want him just sort of dinky and dunky and taking an occasional shot? You know, it's a lot to figure out between now and September.
Talking with Eric Edholm, and let's just talk about the contract for a little bit. On the surface, it seems like the hang-up, and though I think many of us really weren't concerned that the deal wasn't going to get signed, it was just a matter of why would it take so long. It seems like they were, you know, his legal team was testing the parameters of what a rookie contract is and, you know, the commitment that they have to make. If there's a player, you know, in the future who might test those boundaries a little bit more, does it seem like this situation with Caleb signing the deal kind of at the last minute, that maybe it helped progress that a little bit so that players have more, rookie players, especially quarterbacks, have more leverage in the future? Do you think they push that boundary at all?
Yeah, I'd be curious to see, you know, what the conversation will be a year from now or 2 years from now. And as we get closer to negotiations for the next CBA, especially, that's when these conversations tend to ramp up. Every 5 or 10 years, we start having the conversation over what's fair and what's not in the NFL. And obviously, Caleb's people were pushing for some stuff that was viewed as a little off the wall or whatever. But the no franchise tag was obviously it sounded like the biggest thing. And I didn't, yeah, you know, speak to anybody directly about it, but just from what I've heard and read. And so, yeah, that's the kind of thing that, you know, other players and union leaders have been quietly railing against vocally at the times of these negotiations or whenever they have a pulpit. And so, you know, to me, I always look back and say, how many guys are franchised per year? I mean, it's not a massive number. So that could be the kind of thing where the NFL maybe gives some resistance and then ends up kind of giving them that, you know, maybe some kind of concession. I don't know whether it's eliminating the tag or loosening the parameters a little bit or expanding the salary or whatever it may be. But, you know, in a good negotiation, you always make it seem like you're giving up more than you are, you know? So it'll be fascinating to see where that one goes. I don't think it's going away, but I could see it maybe being altered in the future.
I think for a lot of people, Eric, last year turned into quite a surprise when the NFC North ended up being a pretty good division. And yeah, it appears to be probably stronger this year than it was last year. Will it play out that way? Will it play out to be a better division than even 2023 was?
Yeah, I mean, I actually did a piece earlier this summer. I took a lot of flack for it, by the way. I had the NFC North pretty far down.
Oh, really? Okay.
My argument was I didn't think there was yet an elite team, but I said basically one of my – I don't remember what I wrote, but I said, you know, if you want to sort of invest in a division, this is one to do it in, right? I mean, you know, Jared Goff's still very much in his prime. Obviously, you know, the Vikings make J.J. McCarthy. We don't know if he'll pan out, but you know, they invested pretty heavily in him. Same with the Bears and Caleb, and obviously with the who did I miss? Green Bay with Jordan Love. Yeah, so you know, four young quarterbacks, four either up and coming teams, or in the case of the Lions, and maybe you'd argue the Packers too, teams that showed they were here for good last year, but then again, Green Bay was 3-6. You know, Minnesota had a wild season with quarterback injuries and everything last year. We know how the Bears roller coaster went, and you know, even Detroit had some ups and downs, even with as glorious a season as they had. So that's why I have a little bit of hesitation. There wasn't that one clear-cut top 10 type of team outside of the Lions, but most of their divisions seem to have one other little anchor there that's a little stronger, but my words could be eaten pretty darn fast after this year if it, you know, if Love keeps up what he does, McCarthy impresses at some point, obviously Caleb does his thing, and the Lions keep on going.
Yeah, you know, maybe that's a fairer way to put it, that it's, okay, here's what it felt like. It was a division last year that it didn't, a lot of the teams were pretty evenly matched, but nobody really totally stunk, if that makes sense.
Right.
Right.
So, yeah. Like, the weakest team in the division is as good as almost any other team's weakest team, right? Or any other division, I mean, yeah.
Yeah. So, I guess it's that kind of looking at it that way. And I guess it figures that here come the Bears finally, but maybe that team, maybe all the other teams are better too, which kind of sucks. We're talking to Eric Hedholm from NFL.com, who is with us. So, with training camp, you know, not every team reports at the same time. Some teams are getting started a little bit later than others. But as you look across the NFL, is there a storyline outside of the Bears, which really, I mean, they're going to be on Hard Knocks, Caleb Williams, you know, all of this, Rome Odunze, they've got a lot of the preseason hype. Is there a story elsewhere in the NFL that you think is maybe the second most interesting, or maybe you think it's more interesting than the Bears?
Yeah, I'll do a typical journalist trick and pair two teams together, because they do have a common thread, I think, and and that would be the Dallas Cowboys and Miami Dolphins. Both had really impressive regular seasons. Both played really well at home. helped themselves out in doing so. Both quarterbacks had career years. Tua Tagovailoa, Dak Prescott. You know, we're talking about two guys who were in the MVP race last year, you know, at least at various points. Dak finished second. I don't think Tua was fourth or fifth. I can't remember now. But, you know, I mean, we're talking about guys who were at the top of their game last year, and yet both teams lost round one of the playoffs. Unimpressive in doing so. You know, you could say the extreme cold hurt Miami, but still, you got, you know, you're on with Super Bowl. You got to play in those kind of games. But Dallas getting trashed at home by the Packers. You know, Mike McCarthy, hot seat, no doubt. He and Jerry Jones, what's the relationship like? But more importantly, the tie-in with the two teams that I think is most interesting is the quarterbacks and their contracts. Are those teams respectively ready to pay those guys? You know how those contracts go. You just keep upping the ladder a little bit. We're in the $52.5 to $55 million per year range now for the top quarterbacks. Jared Goff is in that neighborhood. You know, I mean, now we're asking ourselves, is this Dak's final year? Is he going to be the next sort of Kirk Cousins guy who, you know, this last season goes to Atlanta? Dak might end up playing somewhere else next year. I mean, did Dallas totally misplay this thing? Miami, how much trust they have in Tua? That's a big story that I think also affects other teams who are thinking about locking up their young quarterbacks, even Green Bay, with Love.
You know, speaking of quarterbacks, clearly it's Patrick Mahomes is by far better than everybody else. And then, you know, you've got Josh Allen. I think a lot of people just pretty much agree he's the second best in the NFL. Maybe there's some disagreement there. But where does Dak fit into that? Does he? He's clearly top 10, I think,
yeah.
Where does he fit, though, in terms of the best in the NFL, in your opinion?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, you know, obviously, I think he played like a top 5 quarterback last year. I think you could say that with confidence. You know, if you factor in the playoff game and the loss, I don't blame you. You know, Lamar was obviously at an MVP level. Joe Burrow had an injury-plagued season, so how much, you know, where do we slot him in? Justin Herbert got hurt for the first time significantly in his career, but now he has Jim Harbaugh. So, you know, all these guys can move up or down two or three spots just one year to the next based on situation. I mean, look, Dak with Mike McCarthy and Brian Schottenheimer last year calling plays, and really only one guy to throw to in CeeDee Lamb, one guy they trusted, you know, in money downs. You know, that was pretty darn good. I mean, they did really well with what they had last year. The old line was kind of crumbling. So, I mean, all those things considered, I thought Dak played at a really high level. Does that mean he's guaranteed to be a top 5 QB this year? I would say probably not. I'll put him in the back end of that top 10, you know, so somewhere between 7 and 10 maybe, if we're thinking also about age and things like that.
Eric, how confident would you be putting your money on the Chiefs three-peat?
I mean, they've made people look silly the last 2 years that they kicked them, right? And yeah, last year was so bizarre because obviously we never really saw the best version of them until they beat Baltimore. I mean, until the playoffs, really. And I mean, I guess you could count Miami too, but still, I mean, it was such a grind to get to that point. I thought, boy, I don't know if they're just going to have enough to get over the finish line against the Niners. They did, and you know, I think Mahomes early on, Kelce is now at the sort of the back, you know, 9 of his career, and he's starting to think about his legacy too. But Mahomes early on talked about, you know, kind of like leaving a mark, and Brady was the target. You know, he has a chance. He's ahead of Brady. He has his third before Brady had his third. I think it was by 1 year or something like that. So don't put it past that alien just taking over again, right? I mean, I may end up picking someone different just to be a little more fun, colorful, you know, change of pace. But like I said, it's Andy Reid, Kelce, Mahomes, Spagnuolo, I mean, it's a good thing they got going there.
Also, I want to ask you about Justin Fields, who I think a lot of us who are Bears fans care about him still and feel like he got a totally raw deal. And I would love to see him find really good success in Pittsburgh. How soon do you think it is before, if at all, before he's their guy there?
It's so fascinating, the situation he's in. And just how that trade unfolded. I mean, we could talk 20 minutes about that, but skipping all that sort of arcana, I mean, you look at the situation, theoretically, Russell Wilson should be the starter, and Justin Fields should be the guy nipping at his heels and trying to take that job over. If you listen to the betting markets, and I can't dispense betting advice because of my job, but if you just look at them, it sounds like people in Vegas think that Fields is going to win that job. If you read the reports of OTAs and minicamps and just the people who are around the team on a daily basis, the local beat writers, they all said Russ looked far more comfortable running Arthur Smith's offense than Fields did. There was even chatter about using Fields with the new kickoff rules. You know, maybe we have a weapon we're going to put back there and a specialty player and that sort of thing. I don't think Justin wants that, a reprise of that role he had week one in L.A., you know, his rookie year, where it was like, come in, have a few plays, go back, grab a sandwich, you know, whatever, come back in. You know, that's probably not going to work for anybody. Russ, you know, I don't know if that's the thing he would want to do either. Is it Mike Tomlin's preference? I don't know. So it's so funny that right now, I'd put that under a fascinating camp storyline, whether you're in Chicago or Pittsburgh or elsewhere. I think it's just very fascinating to see how that one turns out because, you know, Russ played pretty well last year, even if Sean Payton made it sound like he didn't. I thought there were some times where he looked okay. And down the stretch, maybe not as much, but yeah, I couldn't tell you what's going to happen there, but the odds makers think Fields has a shot.
Yeah, I know. That is a super fascinating situation, and again, I think most of us hope he does well there. Eric, at home, as always, it's great to talk football with you, and we appreciate you being with us tonight on a Thursday. And also, hey, I have to totally appreciate your college football coach, Eli Drinkwitz. Eric is a Mizzou guy. His use of acronyms is otherworldly. I don't think I've heard anything better than STI before. Strength, or STI. No, size, toughness, and instincts. That's as good as it gets.
I know. I was thinking, like, what can we do with this? We could certainly make our own versions of these, and we know what it's very close to, right? It sounds very it's towing the line, which is Eli's new thing. He used to just jump over it. Now he's sort of being a little more coy about it. So I love my coach when they're winning.
It's the best. Eric Edholm, thank you. Good to talk to you, man.
Good seeing you, Chris.
That's Eric Edholm, and that's it for us. Want to thank you for listening and for being a part of the show and for texting and for all that stuff. Thank you to Robbie Triano for producing the program tonight. Have a terrific night. Talk to you again soon. I'm Chris Ronji. This is Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly. Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.